Good morning, welcome to Launchpad Radio. This is Kobe Bimish, your host, with Isaac DeSoto and guest co-host Bobby Sanchez. What's up, guys? How you guys doing this morning?
Hey, how's it going?
Feeling great, man. It feels real good. It feels like it's summer again.
Yeah.
Right, man. It does. And you know what? It is summer. What are you talking about? It's May. We're in the middle of May. We're already almost halfway through the year 2018.
So I went by. It's crazy, right? Coming and going.
I just counted, man. We've done like 15, 16 shows this year, and I was like, wow, man, where's the time going? But you know, I'm motivated. I'm inspired. I'm motivated to keep going. And that's why today's show is incredible, because we're gonna talk about the ministry of motivation.
Oh yeah. Kobe already knows we have a great guest.
Yeah, we do, man. But you know, I always start off with some amazing quotes at the beginning of the show, man. And the first quote I got for you guys is always, you know, revolving around the topic, and the topic is, you know, motivation. I don't even think of myself as a motivator. There's some people that can do that. I think I'm more of an aggravator. I'm probably going to aggravate you to do the right thing.
That's better.
Right.
Better.
I'm an aggravational speaker. Right there, yeah. Man. I'm an aggravational speaker, because I'm going to say something that's going to make you mad and say, okay, you know what? I'm going to just do what he's telling me, because he made me mad. Right. So that's
push
more
you
my
to the edge.
Right.
Man.
Right, but at the same time, you know, I think I can inspire you to motivate
for
yourself.
The good.
I think it comes from the inside.
Push you to the edge so that you reach your goals and you achieve what you're setting out to achieve.
Absolutely. So right at the beginning, though, motivation comes from desire. It's why it's important to land your why. That's something that I think about, right? But the first quote from us today comes from Babe Ruth, and it says, "Can't just beat the person who never gives up." How's that for some motivation for you? If a person is never giving up, you just can't beat them, because they're going to keep coming back at you and keep coming back at you until they succeed, right? Yeah. And so that's Babe Ruth. The next one is, ability is what you're capable of doing. Motivation determines what you do. Attitude determines how well you do it. And that's by Lou Holtz. And this next quote we have is...
Dr. Lou.
Yeah, we see things not as they are, but as we are. That was important to me, because a lot of times we can go through life and we may not be motivated, we may not be inspired, but we got to look on the inside for that. That's an inside job.
Right.
Right.
That's right.
So you got to look on the inside and find those ways to find the opportunities for some inspiration so that you can lift your spirits up. So in this last quote, man, this last quote is a doozy, man. It's a long one. So be ready. It says, what some may call mere poetry, I refer to as a verbal spirit driven ministry, which originates from a desire to learn, to know, to fight, to grow, to wish, pray, love, and to reach some point of what the legendary James Brown called escapism. And that's by Mr. Allen J. Bryson, our guest today.
I like
so
that.
So we're going to be hearing from him today, man. He's an author, he's a poet, he's a spoken word artist, he's a motivational speaker and an educational specialist. But before I bring him on,
well, I've been doing my research since last week's show on Allen J. Bryson. I've been really excited about having him on the show, so I've taken it under my own responsibility.
Talk to me now.
To grab some of his work, as far as like videos that he has on YouTube, because he has a very good YouTube channel. If I could say that before,
yeah,
we
you can say
on.
It, then we're gonna
I
let
mean,
him
it's,
say it
it's
too.
Awesome,
when we get on
it's
there.
Inspiring. He has great inspiration and motivation for the youth of today. It's not just for the youth; it goes all the way to people, you know, that are older. You know, entrepreneurs, other people who can use that special motivation that he teaches.
Well, that's the man. You got me on the edge of my seat, man.
Let's bring him in.
This
is Allen J. Bryson. Watch your words.
All right, let's check it out.
Don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to do something that's going to make that's going to ensure that other people profit from it and other people get a benefit from it. So if you want to create something, if you want to do something, be fearless, because you're fearless with everything else. Okay. Also, you got to watch the words you speak. I say this all the time. I say this from folks from 3 years old to 93. You got to watch the words you speak. Because I'm a firm believer, ladies and gentlemen, that words of spirit is wrapped in sound. And when you release a word from your own mouth, you release a spirit that's going to have an outcome on your life. So if you say your kids are bad, they'll be worse. If you say I'm sick, you'll forever live in the bed of infirmity. If you say I'm so broke I can't pay attention, that's exactly where you'll stay, broke. Every single moment of your life, every single morning you wake up, you got to tell yourself stuff that other folks ain't paid to tell you. You got to tell yourself you're beautiful, you're talented, you're healthy, you're rich, you're bound for success. See, when you come to school, most people in your school environment won't tell you that. Like, hey, girl, you're beautiful. You're going to be somebody. They don't. Look at this chick. Sweet, what do she have on? That's what you have to deal with on a regular basis. So what I'm saying is, you have to fortify yourself with the words that you speak about yourself. So you got to stay away from words like, girl, my feet are killing me. I'm afraid not. I'm so broke I can't pay attention. You are speaking death, sickness, and poverty into your life. Why don't you speak some positive words? Like, girl, how you feeling today? I feel like a queen. I feel like reigning. And I ain't talking about making it rain. I'm talking about ruling. That's how you got to speak to yourself. That's how y'all have to speak to each other. Okay? Word speak. I tell you this. Rich people don't talk broke. Healthy people don't speak of sickness. Women in love never talk about drama. Have you ever seen a woman who is so in love that all she talks about is her man? My man, my man, my man, my man. She ain't got time to talk about who ain't doing nothing. She ain't got time to talk about what girl Craig. No, what I'm saying is, when you are focused on the positive, you don't have time for negative. You don't have time for the negative. All your shout outs to your haters, X that. Do y'all hear what I'm saying? Grow your words up. Tell your words to grow up. No more shout outs to people who wishing you hell. It's time to give praise to people who wish you well. How about that? Everybody who supported you, everybody who's loved you and said you were going to do something great, how about you support them in your words? Quit giving shout outs to people who roll their eyes at you. So all these people who throwing toxins into your life, you giving them stage time. That don't make sense. So understand, everything you do is affected by the words you speak. So when you walk into college and they say, how are you? What is your name? You say, my name's Graduate. They're going to be, excuse me? Oh, my name's Zaria, but my last name's Graduate. First name, Zaria. Last name, Graduate. Because that's how it's going to happen. You are going to graduate. It's an expectation. It's a tradition, and it's something that you.
All right, man. You know what happens?
You gotta keep fighting for that.
I'm gonna have to say this, man. First of all, I think he's a aggravational speaker like me. So, without further ado, man, we're gonna bring on Mr. Allen J. Bryson. Mr. Allen, are you on with us?
I am. How are you guys?
Man,
doing good.
Incredible,
how you doing?
Man. Listening to your stuff, man, and doing some research on your stuff, man. Incredibly powerful, bro. Incredible.
Thank you. I was listening to it myself, like, man, who is that? I
right. You know what? Don't you turn into somebody else? When it's coming from the heart like that, you usually turn into somebody else. A lot of times I don't recognize. I was like, man, I don't even believe I just said what I said.
Man, I'm listening to it like
spirit's coming out.
Yeah, so good morning. Good morning, Jim.
Well, good morning, man.
Morning. Good morning.
Where are you hailing to us from?
Chicago, Illinois.
Chicago, Chi-town. Man. How's the weather?
It's better now. We just went through what's called Sprinter. It's a mix between spring and winter, but it's more winter than spring, so we call it Sprinter.
Okay.
That groundhog, huh?
We don't know nothing about Sprinter. We just have one season. It's called summer all year.
Yep.
It might rain sometime, but that's about it. They don't do nothing much more than that. So you're it's better right now. It's probably like bad weather to us over here on the West Coast.
I mean, yeah, we're sitting on about 70 degrees. It changes the attitude. People outside smiling and waving at each other. You know, about a month ago, people were mean mugging, bumping into each other.
Well, I don't know, man. I heard Chicago, man. I heard some amazing stats just this, past week where I guess the shootings went up this year. Not to talk about anything negative, but they blame it that the weather got better.
Well, that's the thing. We have a statement in Chicago that says, the bad thing about summer is the thugs and the bugs.
Oh, wow. Wow.
When the thugs come, the thugs, and here come the bugs, meaning that the bugs are all over the place as well as the thugs. So, that's a sad reality in Chicago. But one of the things we do have in Chicago is a really loving spirit, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I'm on this show today, to kind of let you know, despite those things that we see, we got to keep giving energy to the positive thing.
That's
absolutely
right.
And we're going to get into it, man. Let's start out with your story, man. I mean, you obviously are doing lots of stuff. You're an author, you're a speaker, you serve poet. The community, you're a poet. You know, where did this all start, man? Have you always been in this avenue? Did you have a traditional job? Just tell us a little bit about you.
No, actually, I went to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and I did my bachelor's in communications. And when I was in my junior year, I had these big dreams of becoming an ad executive. And then I took one class, an education class, and it kind of changed my whole paradigm in terms of what I wanted to do. So I started to think about going to graduate school and getting my master's. And I wanted to look at what programs were there, but I had this advisor. I had this advisor that was really, really powerful guy named Sam Mendenhall. He's an attorney now, and I used to have to go see him every week. And I was talking to him about my desire to go to graduate school, and he asked me one question. He said, "What problem do you want to solve?" I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "What problem do you want to solve?" I said, "Where is this coming from?" He said, "In order to go to graduate school, there has to be a problem that you want to solve. You don't go to graduate school just to go to graduate school. You don't go to graduate school just to get a degree. You go to graduate school to solve a problem.
Man.
What problem do you want to solve?"
I'm going to say that's some valuable advice, because how many people and kids that are going to graduate school just for the sake of going there without any plan in place?
Thus my whole transformation into the field of education. So that's how it happened. So I went home and came back, and he said, "I want you to think of a problem, and not only how to solve it, but I want you to ask questions about this problem. Before we talk about a solution, I want you to talk about the problem and ask questions pertaining to that problem." So instead of saying, "I want to study killings in Chicago in the summer," we got to ask questions about that issue. What leads to the killings? Who's getting the guns? Where are they getting them from? Who are the victims? Who are the perpetrators? What is the imagery behind the killings in Chicago? What is the face of killing in Chicago? Is it a black face? Is it a white face? Is it a police officer's face? Is it cancer? Is it the face of cigarettes? What, you know? So all of these questions are what you have to think about before you talk about solving a problem. So I was in this program called Summer Bridge, and at the University of Illinois, it's really relatively difficult to get into school, particularly if you come from inner city high school. So I was in I came from a Chicago public high school, in which the only three people in my graduating class who had gone to the University of Illinois was a valedictorian and two basketball players.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those basketball players wound up in the NBA. So that sends a message that if you want to attend a Big Ten university coming out of a Chicago public high school, you either have to be one of two things. You either have to be the baddest person on an exam or the baddest person on the court. So,
yeah, it's the painter. It's the map that they give us.
Yeah, it's the map. It's right.
That's public school.
To a T. You know, the university would come to our school to recruit basketball players and football players, but they didn't come to recruit students. You know, but the Army was there, the Navy was there, the Marines were there. You know, Job Corps was there.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It sends you a message that you can tell who values who you are by the types of representatives that they send. So we had a lot of small colleges, but we had, at our college fair, we had more Army representatives than actual colleges. And I'm not a military man. So I was like, no, I'm not cut out for the military. So anyway.
Yeah, I think we cut from the same cloth, because I came to that same conclusion after watching my brother get put in the military against his will by my dad.
Wow.
It looked like punishment to me, so I was like, okay, I don't know, man.
My sister went to the military, and yeah, she kind of lived everything.
You have to be cut out for that, because I have a brother, an older brother. He's a former Marine. But the type of person that he is, he was built for that. You know, I don't want to call him crazy, but, you know, he's mentally animated. The dude loves action. He loves being able to, you know, the type of activity that happens with soldiers, he's built for that. He's cut out for that. He finds enjoyment and excitement in that. And we're just cut from a different cloth. Me, I was the one who just always loved to read. And always love to do presentations and be the speaker of the class and do speeches and stuff. So that was my thing.
Now, was that your thing even as a young kid all the way up until now, or did you develop that?
Yeah, I was the kid that always loved to perform. I was the kid that would always dance at the family reunions for the aunts and uncles. I would do the Michael Jackson and the James Brown. My mom would come home and I would be blasting Stevie Wonder. And playing on the couch like it's a piano, and I would have my dad's sunglasses on, and I would be swinging my head back and forth singing, "There is superstition."
Oh, yeah.
And my mother would, you know, so all of the time, she knew I was a little performer. But I had great grades in school except conduct. All of my grades were good except conduct. And conduct is basically how you behave. And I wasn't a behavioral problem, but I was an extrovert. I loved to talk. I loved to crack jokes. So I wasn't like a bully. Or I wasn't a troublemaker. Or I wasn't a disrespectful kid. I just loved to see people smile, and I would love to talk about whatever.
You have what I call ADD syndrome. You're just active all the time.
Yeah.
Mind active. Mind active. Mouth active.
Yeah. Yes. So my mom told me at an early age, she said, you need to find a profession where you can run your mouth. Because if you work in a field where you are in a room by yourself, you're going to starve. If you work in a profession.
That's mama true. Always That's knows. True. Yeah.
Mothers know better.
I always say you better listen to your mama. There's a lot of people out there that should be listening to their mama right now because they have valuable information.
Amen.
I will never forget that. She said, you need to find an occupation in which you can run your mouth because you need to be in an occupation that allows you to interact with people. So, you know, becoming a scientist wasn't my thing because I needed to be around groups of people. And I realized that at an early age. So going back to the story of Illinois, I was part of this program called Summer Bridge. And what they would do, they would take high potential students from inner city schools, bring them down to the campus and make them take two classes and then and participate in enrichment activities. And if you were to successfully complete that program, your admission would be confirmed. See, I was what was called a conditional admit. That meant your admission to the university was conditional on your successful completion of a particular program, which was Summer Bridge. So if I was to not complete Summer Bridge successfully, then they would revoke my admission. I just wanted to go to Illinois. I just wanted to get in the school. I said, you get me in here, and I'll just do the rest. Because what happened, sidebar to that, when I came out of high school, I didn't go directly to the University of Illinois. I went to Morehouse College. I played football in high school. So I wasn't highly recruited, but Morehouse College was one of the only schools that really recruited me. So my dad woke me up the morning of prom, like, wake up, man. It's prom day. Oh, by the way, you're going to Atlanta. I said, going to Atlanta? He said, you're going down there to play football at that school Martin Luther King went to. He didn't even know the name of the school. He just knew Martin Luther King was there. I said, what? He said, yeah, you know that school, that black college down there in Atlanta with Martin Luther King? I said, Morehouse? He said, yeah, the coach called me this morning and said they want you to come down there and play ball. I said, okay, fine. So, you know, my dad, you know, basically said, that's where you're going. There are no options. That's where you're going. So I went down to Atlanta and played a year of football, and they reneged on my football scholarship. And I realized it was a systematic type of revocation. It wasn't that they didn't like me as an athlete and took my scholarship. I realized what happened was that the athletic department was so depleted of funds that what they would do is they would bring in a freshman class and give them partial scholarships, make them pledge allegiance to the program, and then take your money and then give it to the incoming freshman class of the following year. So once you get down there and get
Well, now, you know what? You know what? I hear the music, so we're going to stop right there because I want to come back and I want you to continue and I want you to tell us what happened next and how you actually did get to the school that you wanted to get to, if that's okay.
Man, that's a story you guys are going to be like, I can't believe this dude just said this.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's hold off. We're going to do it right after the break. Listen, this is AM 1620. Our sponsor is Global Executive Media. Check them out. If you got a story you need to tell, you need some publishing, branding, design work, you need a book, some marketing, check them out. www.globalexecutivemedia.com. And then also, if you want to, you know, follow up on the show, check out some of the previous shows, see what shows are coming up next, you can go to yourpersonalgps.com/launchpadradio. So we'll be right back after these brief messages. Welcome back to Launchpad Radio on AM 1620, your place and your guide to the path of success. So we are on the phone right now with Mr. Alan J. Bryson. He is an author, speaker, poet, motivator, also, so far a great human being. And when we went on the break, Mr. Bryson, you were telling us about your journey where you were put into a system at a school in Atlanta Martin Luther King went to, and it didn't go the way you wanted it to. So what happened next?
Well, what happened was when they reneged on the scholarship, I went back to Chicago. I said, if I'm going to be broke and on the street, it's not going to be in Atlanta, it'll be in Chicago. So I went back home, and you guys are not going to believe this, but again, I'm a first-generation college student, so my parents didn't go to college, so my parents didn't really understand what happens when a child goes to college. So my dad and myself living in the house when I left for Morehouse, but when I came back home, you guys are not going to believe this, but this is the honest-to-God truth. This is not made up. This is the honest-to-God truth. I came back to the house that I grew up in, and I rang the doorbell, bags in hand. And a lady that I never seen in my life answered the door. So I'm thinking, this is my dad's new girlfriend. I'm like, you know, my dad was single, and he's dating on and off. So I'm like, okay, this is my dad to move some woman in our house. So I said, hi. She was like, hello. I said, who are you? She said, who are you? I said, ma'am, who are you? She said, young man, you rang my doorbell. Who are you?
Awkward.
You know, I mean, really, if somebody come to your doorbell ringing the doorbell and you answer the door and they're asking, who are you? Like, dude, this is my house.
I'm less words. I'm probably just going to close the door.
Yeah. So thank God she didn't do that. So anyway, I said, ma'am, this is my house. She said, since when? I said, I grew up in this house since I was the age of 5. I said, I've been in this house since 1973. She said, be that as it may, who are you? I said, I'm Anderson Bryson's son. She was like, Anderson Bryson? That's your father? I was like, yeah. She was like, baby, your daddy sold us this house 3 months ago. Your daddy didn't tell you he sold the house? So basically, I go back home to the house where I lived to all my young life, and my dad sold the house to someone and didn't tell me. So I'm knocking on the door of the house that I thought was my home, and it is no longer my home. So I'm homeless now.
But he didn't know you were coming back?
Exactly. My dad was under the impression that when you go away to college, it was like going away. Like, look, I ain't going to see you no more. So, you know, I'll see
you. Oh, he was going to go get his party on. Sold the house.
This belongs on TV, Alan. I mean, like,
they need to make a TV show out of it.
Yeah, this is amazing. I mean, it's not really it's real, but it's funny and entertaining as well.
But it wasn't funny and real. Like, I mean, it was real, but it wasn't funny when you were going through it. So continue, please.
I mean, it wasn't really funny or sad. It's just what it was. So she closed the door. I said, well, thank you, ma'am. Sorry for disturbing you. She said, you need to go find your dad. I said, I guess I do. Well, you know, I finally tracked him down by phone, and he moved out to a surrounding suburb in a one-bedroom apartment. So he told me that I couldn't stay with him. He told me I had to find somewhere to stay. I said, Dad, I don't have anywhere to go. He said, you'll figure it out. Those were his exact words.
That is that old school learning. That's that old school teaching. Love. That's that old school teaching.
Yeah.
I have to premise it by this story real quick. I'll make it quick as can if I can.
You don't have to go quick. We still got an hour, man. We still got an hour. You can talk about what you need.
If I go off on tangents, y'all reel me back in. Well, no, my dad is a product of his environment. My dad went to high school, And he was so busy girl chasing that he got kicked out of school early. What do I mean by that? My dad would go to summer school every summer for 3 straight years. And he would accumulate, he would take about 2 or 3 classes every summer. But the only reason he was going to summer school was to look at the girls. So all the pretty girls were in summer school.
That's true to this day. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he would go to summer school every summer just to be around the women.
I plead the fifth.
Come to find out, his alleged senior year, they told him that he was done. They said, what do you mean I'm done? They say, sir, you have so many credits that you are officially a graduate of this high school. You have one more class to take, and after that, you're done. So my dad took so many courses over the summer that he exceeded his requirement for graduation. So he basically had to graduate as a junior. So when he came back home, yeah.
Talk about failing forward.
Yeah. So he came home and, you know, his parents were very old school. Dad, granddad's a World War II vet. My dad's a Vietnam vet. So my dad came home and my grandfather told him, well, you done with high school. What you going to do? He's like, I don't know what I'm going to do yet. He said, you got 2 weeks. He said, 2 weeks for what? He said, 2 weeks to find out what you're going to do and get out of this house. He said, Dad, I'm 17 years old. He said, I don't care. I have to get out of this house in 2 weeks.
I swear, so that's, this sounds just like my dad, because I don't care what all of us, my dad to all the boys, he was like, y'all got to be gone. As soon as you turn 18, you out here. Mm-hmm. I don't care what exactly. You got to do. Your 18th birthday, I don't care.
Exactly. Yeah. So my dad was just like that. So my grandfather was like, you have to get out of here in 2 weeks. So he looked at my mom and he tried to pull the baby boy thing. Mom, are you going to let this man throw me out of your house? She looked at my father and said, I support your daddy. You got to go. See, back then, we didn't have that good cop, bad cop. Mom and daddy stood together back then. It wasn't no, well, ask your mom and she said yes, ask your daddy. He said no. The house said yes, it was a yes. The house said no, it was a no. You couldn't. In our family, you couldn't go to mama and get something that daddy wouldn't give you, and vice versa.
That didn't fly in my house either. My dad might tell me to go ask my mom, but if I go ask my mom and mom say no, it was done.
Whenever your mom would say go ask your dad, you knew right then and there this ain't gonna work out well.
Yeah, and even if my dad said, go ask your mother, or if my mom said no, or my dad said no, and I went to go try to ask the opposite person to turn the other person against the other one, oh, that was a butt whooping for real.
Oh yeah. Because now you're trying to divide the team.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was a no-no.
Ain't no dividing the team. Ain't no changing the path. Everybody finna go out the same door.
Yeah, no, that was...
The coordinator says... You can't start this game.
You can't go to the head coach and say,
the offensive coordinator said, I can't start. Well, that's the case. You can't start. So my grandfather kicked my dad out at 17 years old. My dad was forced to enlist in the Navy, and he served in Vietnam at the age of 18. So that mentality of when you're done with school, you're done in this house.
He learned it. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was the mentality that saturated our house. So. My dad kicked everybody out. My dad would tell all of us, look, at age 18, you have to go. Male or female, you have to go. You got to go at 18. So my brother had gone away to college, and he had come back because he had gotten into some trouble. And he was coming back to kind of, you know, reestablish what he was going to do with his life. And my dad told him the same thing that my grandfather told him. He said, you got 2 weeks. He said, 2 weeks? He said, you got 2 weeks to get out of this house. So 2 weeks later, my brother was enlisted in United States Marine Corps. And he's had an incredible life and lived a fulfilling life ever since. But he was put in that position where it was like, okay, I don't have long to get out of this house. So he would tell us all the time, at 18, you are gone. You're going to get $400 and a suitcase. And that's what you're going to get for your high school graduation. So when my high school graduation came, I didn't get the suitcase. I said, Dad, where the suitcase? He was like, I didn't have the money to pay for it. I said, well, what about the $400? He said, that's why I ain't buy the suitcase. So he said, if I'd had the $400, you'd have had the suitcase. So my whole my entire childhood was based on this deadline of age 18. We all knew at age 18 you had to be out of the house. My dad would tell me on my 10th birthday, I'll never forget this. Gentlemen, this is a true story. My dad would tell me it was my 10th birthday. I'd made age 10. My mama was so happy. My dad looked at me and said, "Happy birthday, son. You got 8 years."
See, you know what, Mr. Bryson? I'm gonna have to say this. See, I'm making some connections as you telling me this story because it sounds way too familiar. And I'm just like, you know, my dad is from Chicago. That's where he was born and raised.
Let's not go Maury Povich up in here.
Well, I'm just saying the philosophies is too close, right? Get out of the house by the time you're 18 for me, all my brothers, right? You know, you ain't got to go, you know, nowhere. And he didn't give me nothing.
We're millennials. Like our parents want us to get out the house by 18. And, like, I think generally we want to be out the house by 18.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, you step outside and you look at the world. You look at rent. You look at mortgages. You look at other bills that you're going to have.
For that millennial.
Right, Bobby, you know what I'm talking about.
It's
cheaper to stay home. At least we can, like, stack.
We can save enough money.
Alex, do you hear these millennials on here? Do you hear what I got to deal with every day?
Yep. The world is expensive.
Yeah, so he was like, you know, at 10, my 10th birthday, he said, "You got 8 years." And my mama looked at him like, "Why you got to go through this now?" He said, "I just want to remind the boy that his time is short."
No, see, Pops is being real, yeah. Man.
Ain't no love like family love.
He said, "You got 8 years." I said, "8 years for what?" He said, "8 years to get out this house. You better enjoy these last 8 years." I said, "Dad, that's almost 10 years from now." He said, "I'm just getting you ready."
Yeah, you better start planning now because it's going to go by quick.
Yeah, and it did.
Time flies.
So I knew that approaching high school, that I knew approaching my senior in high school that my days were numbered in that house. And I knew that I had to make sure that I had, you know, some things lined up for the next steps in my life. So when Morehouse called and said, "We want your son to play football," my dad was like, "Well, I don't have to officially pick him out. Morehouse is going to snatch him from the house, and everything's going to be well. So I don't have to be the bad cop. Morehouse is going to get this kid out of my house."
Wow.
So that's exactly what Morehouse did. Morehouse did my dad the favor of not having to give me 2 weeks' notice. My dad was like, "In 2 weeks, you're going to Morehouse." So with that in mind, when I came back home and he sold the house, I had nowhere to go. And he said, "You'll figure it out." And that was probably the realest thing my dad had ever said to me. You know, it was very brief, but very powerful. But he said, "You will figure it out." And I had nowhere to go.
Right.
So I wound up sleeping on the basement floor of one of my former teammates' grandmother's house. One of my former teammates, I used to, like, hang out with him. We were really close. And his grandmother was, like, you know, part of my village. And his grandmother would take us to practice and come to the games and things, and I would hang out over there. So I became really close with her. And when I had nowhere else to go, I called Grandma Brown, and I said, "Grandma, I'm back from school. I'm not going back, and I need a place to stay for a couple of days." She said, "You can stay with me. Just sleep in the basement." So there was no floor. I mean, there was no bed in the basement. So she gave me a sheet and a blanket and a pillow. And said, "Make it happen." So I was basically sleeping on the floor of my teammate's grandmother's house. So basically, I was homeless. Now, here comes the crazy story. After a couple of weeks, I moved in with my sister. And I was sleeping on her floor. 19 years old, sleeping on her floor. I was working at UPS during the graveyard shift. You know those brown package cars that come around your neighborhood?
Yeah. Oh, trust me. Know UPS.
Yeah, so from Brown.
Everybody should know UPS from Biz Markie. Girl, you work for UPS. I almost said the word on here, man. But, you know, Kanye already got people on fire. I ain't trying to make nobody mad.
So I used to load those cars at 2 o'clock in the morning every day. So I went to a party. This is where the whole Illinois thing comes in. I went to this party, right? I went to a party at a club. And I saw this girl, we hit it off, start dancing, everything. So I asked, I said, "What do you do?" She said, "What do you do?" I said, "I work for UPS. So she was like, "Oh, that's cool." And I said, what do you do? She said, I'm a student. I said, what school? She said, I go to the University of Illinois. I said, okay, I'm going to come down and check you out one day. She said, okay, fine. Come on down and visit me. Fellas, I went to visit her. Had a great time. Came back home. And I said, I want to come back down there. She said, okay, come on back down. So I came back down the next week. Then I came back down the next week. And then I went back down the next week. So for 6 months, every weekend, I was driving to Champaign to see this girl. And I would do everything from go to the parties to hang out on the yard. So we were in McDonald's one day eating lunch. And I said, you know what? I would give my right arm to go to this school. She said, why don't you just apply? And I said, well, I took the ACT the first time, got a 12. I took it again and got a 13. They don't want me here. She said, you know what? You need to apply. Despite all of that, you should apply. And she said, I'm going to give you three people to talk to. And those three people are going to help you get in this school. I was like, are you sure? She said, yeah. So she gave me the name of three individuals, two students and one administrator, that showed me the opportunities of a kid from Chicago who didn't have great ACT scores of how to get in the university. So they told me about this program, told me to apply and everything. Gentlemen, I got in. But they told me that they wouldn't take any of my credits from Morehouse.
Wow. You know, at least for me, you know, women can do that to men, can make them change their whole direction and do something
and
that they would not normally
that's
do.
For
yeah,
good
absolutely.
Or bad.
This was, and look at this was for the positive, right? By putting some forceful words into you and saying, hey, man, you need to go ahead and do that anyway.
And see, this is the powerful thing about this entire situation with her. She knew that our relationship would be sacrificed if I came to that school. She knew that if I got in and I started to go to school there, that we wouldn't last as a couple.
Well, let's stop right there. Stop right there. Because we got another break coming up because my producer and I put the music in. So that means we got to go pay some bills. So let me stop you right there. And we're gonna talk about that, man. We're going to talk about this young lady that did that and some other stuff. Man, if you're just joining us, we're on with Mr. Alan J. Bryson, author, speaker, poet,
educator,
you know, public speaker, great person. We're talking about the Ministry of Motivation. We're just getting into a story right now. We're gonna motivate you on the second
title
hour.
That's the title of one of his books, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get into that in a second.
Yeah, we're gonna hold you guys captive and get through a story, and then we're gonna really give you guys some good words next hour. So anyway. AM 1620, sponsored by Global Executive Media. Check them out, www.globalexecutivemedia.com. And then you can follow us on your personal gps.com/launchpadradio. We'll be right back after these brief messages. Welcome back to Launchpad Radio. I'm your host, Kobe Dumas, joined with Isaac DeSoto and Bobby Sanchez.
What's up?
Yeah, so, and we got on the phone with us Mr. Alan J. Bryson. Mr. Bryson, you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Now, man, when we went on break, you was telling us this story about how you was going back every week to go see this girl at a school that you wanted to go to, and then she talked you into applying anyway, even though you had defeated your own mindset and said that, you know, you had already made up your mind that you weren't going to be able to do it, got in there. And then you said that she got you in there knowing that it would be the end of your relationship. What does that mean?
It meant that, I have the utmost respect for her to this day for that. She understood that my success going to that school was more important than our relationship. You know, we live in a time now where people will sacrifice the well-being of their mate if it means a threat of their relationship. Meaning that if a young lady is dating a guy who has an opportunity to do an internship in Japan for a year, but he will come back with an incredible experience that could land him a job or could make him, give him the ability to start his own business. If he has to be in Japan for a year, she will talk down that opportunity and do everything in her power. And I'm not saying this is all women, but some cases this could happen where she would try to talk him out of it because she doesn't want to be away from him for a year. Mm-hmm. Or she understands that within that year, something could happen where he could come back and not want to be with her anymore. But this young lady that I was dating, she understood that me going to the university could be the end of our relationship. And when she told me that, she actually told me this, guys. She told me that when I told her that I got accepted, I showed her the acceptance letter, and she said, "Go ahead and sign the papers." And I was like, "Okay," and I signed the papers. And she said, "You know, you could be possibly signing our relationship away." And I was like, "What do you mean by that?" She's like, "I'll explain it to you later." I was like, "What do you, whatever." Okay, so after we broke up, she explained it to me. So I got there. Gentlemen, we didn't last the first semester. The first semester I was there, we broke up by Thanksgiving. And when we broke up, it was really hard and difficult, but she knew that that was bound to happen. And she said, "I told you this when you signed those papers, that this would happen." And I was like, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, the type of person that you are," she said, "I knew people would fall in love with you, and you would probably fall in love with other people. And I knew that that would be a threat to us. But my main goal with you was to get you in this school and getting you in this school and getting you started on a track to a new life and get you out of UPS and get you out of Inglewood, Chicago. To get you out of that was more important than us.
I was like Inglewood. You was in Inglewood?
Yeah,
my neck of the woods. I was like, okay, wait. Inglewood. Okay, Inglewood, Chicago.
Yeah, this is Inglewood with an E.
Okay. Not an I. Okay, got it.
Yeah, it's a famous community on the south side of Chicago. It's where Derrick Rose came from and a lot of other Chicago notables.
Yeah, definitely. And inner city type of is it like our Inglewood inner city?
It's worse than Inglewood. It's like a combination of your Watts and your Compton, right?
Yeah. So same thing. Okay, got it. Understood.
Yeah. So whenever you hear people from Chicago say Inglewood, stand up, that means the people from that particular community. This is a shout out to you. So anyway, she said, "I want to get you out of Inglewood and get you on the path to something greater." And I had the utmost respect for her because she knew that me getting into that university was more important than us staying together and me staying back in Chicago. So I had the utmost respect for her to this day for doing that. So I got into university, and they told me that we won't accept any of your credits from Morehouse. You'll have to start over. I said, "You mean to tell me I got to start over as a 20-year-old freshman?" They said, "That's right, sir. You have to be you will be the oldest freshman in the incoming class." I said, "I'll take it."
Right.
I said, "I'll take it." My thing was, I just want to get in that school. I said, "You get me in the school, I'm not leaving until I get at least one degree." So, thank God that I got in, and things just, my whole life changed after I got in there. My whole pathway of life just changed once I got there, because I began to get in contact with people and experiences that kind of made me the person that I am. So, again, when I was meeting with my advisor and he told me to go to graduate school, I was telling him I wanted to go to graduate school. He was saying, "What problem do you want to solve?" So one of the problems that I saw is that the program that I was in, Summer Bridge, we brought in 75 students. By junior year, only 12 of those 75 remained on campus.
Oh, wow.
You're talking about 75 African-American and Latino students at a university that came in an enrichment program, and then at the end of 3 years, only 12 of those 75 remained.
Whoa.
So I thought that was a problem, and I wanted to know 10%. Why. Yeah, because I started to see my friends not come back. Every year, four or five of my friends from Summer Bridge were not coming back to the university. So I went home and thought long and hard, and I came back to them and I said, "You know what, I want to find out why black and brown students are coming to these predominantly white institutions and not graduating at the same rate as their counterparts. You know, what are the issues behind why students from various backgrounds do not come to these institutions and stay and graduate?" So that was an issue, that was a problem that I wanted to ask questions about. So when I started my graduate program, I did a master's in educational policy at the university, in educational policy studies, and my whole thesis for my master's degree was centered around factors that affect matriculation and attrition rates for African-American and Latino students at predominantly white institutions, meaning, you know, what are the reasons that students who look like me did not last for 4 years the way I did? So I wanted to look at that. And that's when my entire higher ed administration type of career kind of took off because I really began to develop my academic identity. My professional identity was basically higher ed administration in terms of helping students, all students, find a way to stay in college. So that's where the academic and the educational part took off. So after I finished my master's at University of Illinois, I came back to Chicago and I started working at various universities in the Chicago area, and I'm still doing that today, and having a great time working with young people and helping them go to school. And the very lessons that were instilled in me, I'm able to pass along to them.
And that kind of shaped your journey.
It did. It did. And what happened was that one of my mentors, the gentleman who ran the program, the Summer Bridge program, for graduation, I was graduating, and I brought him a graduation picture of me in a frame, and I gave it to him, and I said, thank you. This is my graduation gift to you for helping me, and if it wasn't for your program, I wouldn't be graduating from this university. He was like, oh, man, that's cool. I said, that's all you got to say.
You don't mind saying his name, do you? He was a mentor, right?
No, Ron. His name was Ron Woolfolk. He was the director of the. He was one of the deans in the liberal arts and sciences College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, and he was the director of the Summer Bridge program. So his program helped me not only get into school, but all of the connections that he had and the resources that he was connected to. I took advantage of those, and he told me. That's how I got my first job. My first job, I would go. He told me that I needed to go get tutoring. So I went to go get tutoring, and I got tutoring for one class. And I'm going to tell you, this sounds like something out of a movie, and they did actually show it in the movie, but that's why it sounds so crazy. I went to get tutoring, and tutoring was over, right? So I was done. But there was this chemistry tutor. Fine. Three times fine. Like, you look at him, fine,
tutor and fine equals problems in some cases.
yeah, or it means fabricated justification for tutoring.
So
I would go to tutoring every week just to see her, because my tutor was right across the table from her. So we were at one table and her table was on the other side of the room. So I would go to my tutor for like psychology. It was like psychology or something. And I'm just staring at her. So I got my tutoring and I said, okay, I'm gonna keep coming back to tutoring to see her. And I think let's say her name is Crystal. So I kept coming back to tutoring to see Crystal. So the next semester I came back to sign up for tutoring. Crystal wasn't there. I said, where's Crystal? They were like, Crystal got a PhD. She's now working at Stanford. She's a professor at Stanford in chemistry. I said, what? She's gone? They were like, yeah, she left. Aren't you happy? She, black woman, PhD in chemistry. She at Stanford, blah, blah, blah. I think it was Stanford, one of the schools in L.A. It was either Stanford or UCLA. I was heartbroken. So I'm like.
Selfish thoughts.
I came to see Crystal. So one of the directors said, you know what? You spent a lot of time around here, man. You want a job? I said, yeah. What do I have to do? He said, well, we need some student workers to do such and such and such. So that's how I began putting my handprint on my own journey in the university. I started connecting myself with people and things, and I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. So the guy saw me there so much, and he's like, man, you here all the time talking and having a great time and tutoring and getting tutoring. You want a job? I said, yeah. I'll take a job. So, but when I graduated, I gave Mr. Woolfolk a graduation picture of me. And he said, yeah, man, this is great. I said, this is my thank you. He says, no, it's not. I said, what? He said, this is a picture and it's a gift, but it's not a thank you. I said, what do you mean it's not a thank you? He said, look here, man. He was he was real hipster back in the 60s. He marched in the 60s. So he was like one of the old Black Panther kind of cats. And he would talk like that. Like, look here, man, check this out. So, he said, 20 years from now, man, he said, look at my chair. I said, I'm looking. He said, who sits in that chair? I said, you do. He said, in 20 years, man, I'm not going to be in this chair. I need somebody to replace me in this chair. I said, okay. He said, you see that dude on the graduation picture you gave me? I said, yeah. He said, that's who's going to replace me in this chair in 20 years. So I was like, wow. And at first, I didn't really understand what it meant. But as I started my career in higher ed, it all made sense. I replaced the very man who helped me, because the program that he ran for helping students get through the university and go on to graduate school, I'm now doing that right now.
Right. Are you doing that? Are you doing it there where he was at?
No, I'm doing it at the University of Illinois at Chicago. But he did it at the University of Illinois at Urbana.
Wow, so that's incredible.
I am basically doing the same thing that he was doing some 25 years ago. And every time I tell a story, it kind of chokes me up, because I was like, man, he knew back then that I would be the person to replace him in this field of work. And I was like, what would make you say that? He said, man, I see what you're doing, and I see what you're studying, and you got the heart that I got. You, man, you got the same heart, man. He said, you got a heart for these black and brown kids. You got a heart for these college students, man, and you're gonna go big. You're going to go places and do the same thing I'm doing, and you're going to do more. I said, Ron, if I could be like you, that'd be half the battle. He said, no, man, you'll never be like me. You will never be like me. And at first I got offended. Yeah, you mean I'll never be like you? He said, you'll never be like me. I was like, okay. Something told me, just keep your mouth shut, keep listening. He said, you'll never be like me, man. You know why? I said, why? He said, because you'll be better than me. And at the time, it was 1992. He said, man, I am the 1972 model. You are the 1992 model, which means you can do things better than me, go places I can't go, you can speak languages I can't speak, you can go farther, you can reach more people, you will be much greater than I ever have been, and I'm okay with that. And right to this day, fellas, I am saying that same thing to my students.
Right.
I tell my students all the time, I said, look, man, I'm the 1992 version. I'm the 1992 model. But you're the 2018 model. If you take a 1992 Cutlass and you put it next to a 2018 Cutlass, look at the difference at the capabilities of that car. I said, look at the navigation, the suspension, look at the technology that goes into that car compared to what that car looked like in 1992. And I said, because of that, that's what you're going to be. You're going to be much greater than me. So when my students say, Mr. Bryson, I just want to be like you, I said, you'll never be like me, man. your DNA alone and your position in this world dictates that you will become much greater than I will ever be.
Yeah, because they're taking in everything that's been input into them previously and making it better. That's a lot of our challenges that I think that we have with the millennial communication today, is because they think differently than we think, and they do things a lot differently, but they're taking in all the same input.
Yeah, it's because it's the different access points. That's all. I don't think it's like,
I agree.
It's not like a middle finger to the, oh, well, I mean, it's like, it's easier. Like, if they, like, with Fred Flintstone had to pedal his car. Like, his car has wheels and a steering wheel, but he had to pedal his car. Compared to, like, George Jetson, he just get in and push a button and fly.
And it flies.
I mean, like, you can't tell me, oh, hey, why don't you take Fred Flintstone's car today? Because, you know, whatever reason, you know, you mean like, nah, because I know George Jetson, like, he'll fly me over there and be there in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But it's here's just the access thing, points. Gentlemen, here's the thing. As adults, as passers of the torch, we have to be comfortable in knowing that the younger generation will be better than us. They have to be. But we live in a time in a society now where the older generation, not all, but some members of the older generation are jealous that young people have access that they don't have. Well, when I'm back in my day, we're not talking back in your day. What you have to do as someone who works with young people or someone who's around young people, you have to tell them how great they are. You have to tell them what they have compared to what you have in reference to how far they can go. But we have some people in our community that don't want to extend that sentiment to our kids. And see, when you tell a kid, look, man, I'm the 2008 model, but you're the 2016, that means you're going to do a lot more than I ever could. You know what that does to a kid?
Yeah, it gives him a lot of inspiration, a lot of motivation, and a lot of drive.
Confidence.
Yeah, confidence. Some confidence, and everything.
Not only that, it bridges the gap between the younger generation and the older generation, because now you have established a foundation of respect and hope. You are looking at this young man or this young lady and saying, because I see you, I see a future, and I see a hope that has something great coming. And you are the basis of that.
And there's no competition. There's no fight against each other because it's embracement.
It is. But see, what happens now is that, you know, we live in a time now where everyone is so competitive. And even in our own village, we've got the elders in our village trying to compete with the youth. Don't compete with that which you created. You should see what you created go further and sit back and be happy about it. I don't have to compete with guys half my age, because when I was half my age, I competed. When I was half my age, guys who were twice my age would tell me, man, the things you're going to do in this life, I can't wait to see you do it. And that transcended my life when I'm doing that to these young people now. But we live in a community sometimes now where older people are jealous of the young people.
But what was your, when somebody told you something like that, and I want to actually go back a little bit too, because you were talking about the mentor who put you in the position, and it's of my opinion that everybody has those people come through their life, far and few between. Mine was a gentleman by the name of Kevin Carter, who they came in and said, hey, I can show you exactly what to do. I can show you how to do it and put you in a position to get some exposure so that you can get into a better position, right? So
yep.
I think that those people are far and few between, right? And and those that are recognized. So when somebody's telling you, like he was inspiring you and motivating you and telling you you're going to be in this chair, you know, and these guys is telling you things that you're going to be better than me or you're going to be more improved. How did you feel about that at the time? I mean, did you believe that? Were you able to wrap your head around it, or did you think you were on that path, or did you kind of deny it a little bit? Because I see that in people now where you tell them something positive about themselves and they go into denial or not accepting it. Did you go through that?
For me, it was a little bit of all of that. At first, I doubted it. And then at first, I couldn't wrap my mind around it. Then I started doubting it. And then I sat back and I digested it. And it became a responsibility. And that's when it became real. Because it went from, oh, man, what is he talking about, to, oh, my God, what is he talking about, to, oh, my God, this is what he's talking about. Oh, my God, I'm now responsible to make come into fruition what he said. So it was a little bit of all of that, but at the end of that, it was a sense of responsibility. When this man told me that I would be twice as better than, when he told me I'd be twice as great as he was, I didn't take it as a compliment. I took it as a charge. I took it as, oh, man, now I have to do this.
And see, I want to point something out, Alan, because this is one of the main reasons why I have my show is trying to get people to learn through journeys and other people's stories and challenges, that is really that conversation that you have with yourself that's going to make you or break you. And it seems like that's exactly what you went through, where somebody gave you the feedback, you took the feedback in, and you actually processed it. Some of us stop once somebody gives us that feedback and says, hey, you know, you can do this. And then our feedback is, oh, I could never do that. And then we stop right there. We don't have that conversation like you did that drills down, that actually gets to the root and go, wait a minute, I'm responsible. Because that's key.
I think one of the things that helped me, though, is I'm a real spiritual guy. I mean, I'm not like, you know, priest or T.D. Jakes or nothing like that. But, you know, I'm a man of faith, and I do a lot of talking to God.
Mm-hmm.
So when he told me that, I went back and I talked to God. I'm like, God, what is this all about? And basically the conversation was like, God was like, okay, look where you were the first day you got here. Look where you were the day before you got here. Look where you are now, and look at that in reference to what this man said.
And
go ahead.
I was going to say, man, I think that's the exact conversation that you need to have. And I tell people all the time, you can put there what you will. It could be the spirit. It could be God. It could be your personal voice. It could be whatever you need at the point. But the point is, you need that.
Right.
For me, fortunately, it was a combination of all of those. I talked to myself. I talked to my family. But then I had family members that were like, dude, you need to go sit and just have a quiet moment with God, man, and make sense of this whole thing, because he's going to give you answers to things that, you know, the people that you speak to may not be able to clarify. And once I did that, it became clear. And that's when it became scary, because after I And when I had that conversation with God, it was like, dude, you are now responsible for the greatness of the next generation.
Now,
so that's when it became real. It was like, now I am now responsible for a group of individuals
right.
who are going to come on my way, and I got to do whatever it is I can to make sure they get from me what I got from Mr. Wolfolk.
That's right. And I want to ask, had you never spoke to Mr. Wolfolk and had that conversation with him about that the next generation and you being instrumental in the shaping of their journey, what would you have been doing? What will you have been doing? Would you have been a teacher? Would you have been just somebody that if anybody asked?
I honestly think if I had not had that experience with Mr. Wolfolk while I was at the university, I probably would have gotten a degree in something and then just been working a job. But one of the things that I do with my motivational speaking is that my foundation is purpose. Purpose over, and I just did
purpose
a speech.
Driven.
Yeah, I just
Bobby
did a,
hitting.
I just did a speech. I just did a speech at the University of Illinois at Urbana last week. And I did a presentation to a group of college students, and the title of my discussion was Purpose Over Profession, Destiny Over Degree. And what I mean by that is I'm not putting down professions and I'm not putting down degrees, because we all need, we all have professions and we need degrees to get those professions. But what I was trying to let those students know is that you have a purpose in your life that supersedes your profession, and there's a destiny in your life that supersedes your degree. And the problem that our young people have right now is that they think that their destiny is that outcome. They think their destiny is their degree. Well, once I become a doctor, that's my destiny. No, it's not.
Yeah, because a lot of times, dude, man, I love this, because most of the time when you get out of college, I literally talked to somebody this week crying, literally crying from her 30th or so interview. And she says, I have a degree. I did everything right. And nobody won't hire me because I don't have experience. And I think that's a tragedy.
It's wrong.
It's wrong.
It is.
I think it's a tragedy.
And what that does,
you got to start somewhere.
It puts a black eye on higher education.
Right.
It makes those who never went to college, it gives them justification to say, see, that's why you shouldn't have went to college. That's why I'm laughing at all you people that spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to college and you still can't find a job. Well, one of the things that I'm trying to do when I speak to college students is have them focus on their purpose. And when you focus on your purpose and what your destiny is, and we talk about your why, see, your why is your purpose. Your why is your assignment. There's an assignment on everybody's life. Everybody, this life is a classroom, fellas, and we are all in a class, okay? And each one of us has, even though we're in the same class, we all have different assignments. We have different assignments, and we have to know what that assignment is. And the assignment for your life is not to get a college degree. The assignment for your life is to not get a job. The assignment for your life has to supersede anything that you can get.
It's got to be your passion.
It's got to be your passion.
Yeah, it's got to be your passion.
I ran into a white guy at the Champs. I was in, I wear a lot of athletic gear, so I was in. I was in Champs, and I had on my Illinois gear. I had an Illinois hat, Illinois jacket, varsity letterman's jacket. So a white guy came up to me. He said, oh, you went to Illinois? I said, yeah. He said, he asked me. He said, you like Illinois? I said, I am Illinois. He said, what does that mean? I said, yeah, and I tell people that all the time. I didn't go to Illinois. I didn't graduate from Illinois. I am Illinois. That's who I am. That's part of my fiber. I said, no, I didn't go there. I am Illinois. He said, what does that mean? I said, I'm a graduate, but that place has a large, huge part of my life. So when people ask me, did I go? I said, I am. So he said, let me ask you this. He said, he asked me what my degree was in. And I told him I got my bachelor's and my master's. And he was like, man, that is awesome. He said, let me ask you this. Because the thing was that he had gone to Illinois, and he left after his freshman year. Because his dad pushed him to be a chemist. No, his dad pushed him to be an engineer, and he went and he didn't like engineering. He left the university and he now is working in some type of business sector where he works for himself, and he's an entrepreneur. But he asked me this one question. He said, "Let me ask you this: are you currently working in the field in which you got your degree?" I said, "Fortunately, I am, and I always have been. Since the first day I left the university, I have worked in the field in which my degree states." And he said, "You know what, man? I'm going to tell you this right now. That is a very powerful statement, and I'm happy for you, because I know so many people who have gone to universities and they've gotten degrees and they're no longer working in those fields. I know so many people teaching third grade who have law degrees. I know so many people with philosophy degrees who are selling insurance." And he said, "For you to be out of college 25 years later and still working in the very field that you have your degree in, man, that's an amazing thing." And it made me sit back and say, man, that is a blessing. And I'm blessed and happy about that, because that's something that a lot of my classmates can't say, you know. So, the thing I want students to understand is that you got to have a purpose before you look for a profession. You got to have a destiny before you look for that degree, because if not, you will think that degree is your destiny. And when that degree does not fulfill you or does not put you at a place where you're actually feeling like you're contributing to society, you will feel like a failure.
Hello.
And you will feel like a failure. And a lot of times people who feel like failures despite their achievements, we have highly decorated and highly accomplished people in this society who go home miserable and who wake up sad. You know why? Because they don't know their why.
And they're not following their passion. They're just following what's bringing the check. Yeah. They're just bringing the check.
They're collecting a check, and they're collecting accolades, and they're accumulating stuff.
When your life becomes, I'm sorry to interrupt. When your life becomes the product of just paying your bills, to, you know, being able to just making your money just to pay your bills, then that's not really the life that you're destined to do. And I know a lot of people that are living life right now that are doing just that. They're barely making it. They spend all their time making money only to run to the weekend or hate dread when Monday gets here to do it all over again. And, you know, it seems like it's a never ending story with some people.
I was told by one of my advisors in college, he said, "You know why it's important to know what your destiny is?" And I'm like, at that time, I didn't know anything about destiny. He said, "Man, you've got to find the destiny for your life, because that's going to lead to the occupation that you want and you need and you'll be best at." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Let me tell you something." He said, "You want to look and get an occupation that will make you not angry about Monday. You want to work in a field that when Monday comes around, you wake up like, well, let's go do this, as opposed to, damn, here comes Monday."
Right.
You know, and I am proud and blessed and happy to say that I don't dread Monday. I don't dread them. Now, if I'm coming from Vegas and I done just had a great time, yeah, I'm dreading Monday then, because I still got Vegas all over me. But what I'm saying is I don't dread going into work on Monday. Because my passion and my destiny and my purpose is surrounded by doing what I can to make sure that these students become much better than I ever was. And that fuels me and that gives me a smile. So when I'm on the train going into work, I mean, I'm hopeful. I don't dread like, oh, God, another day at the office. That's not the experience.
Because you wouldn't be living in your passion if you thought that every day.
No. And I'm trying to get not only young people, but I'm trying to get their parents to reevaluate their lives and assist in a way that they can try to do whatever it is that they can to start living their passion. And it doesn't even have to be on a full-time basis. If you like baking and baking is your passion, spend your weekends baking and selling what you bake. You never know what selling cupcakes here and there could lead to a possible bakery business, or lead to a possible, you know, partnership with a hotel where they contract you out to do nothing but bake cakes. You know, that's a side business that could be but see, that's your passion. If that's your passion, if that's your purpose, that's what you have to find. And so many times we are, you know, that's one of the reasons why we have so many miserable adults, because they look at, or that's one of the reasons why so many people value their days of past. You ever got those friends that are like, man, remember the days of high school? Remember high school, man? Those are the best days of our lives. Remember college, man? College were the best days of our lives. I don't say that. You know why? Because the best days of my life are right now.
Exactly. And some of them haven't even been discovered yet.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is, if you look at your past and say those were the best days of my life, then you're not living in your purpose. Because when you live in your purpose and you know your why, every day is an opportunity to live the best days. And you got to find things and activities and people and activities and all. You got to find stuff that makes you feel like, man, today was one of the best days of my life. So I never go back to my high school reunion picnic and be like, man, high school, you'll never get those days back. I'm glad we'll never get them back because I've moved on. I'm not in high school anymore. College, I had a ball in high school. I had a ball in college.
You're using everything you learned from then on.
Yeah.
To make you the best you that you are today, right?
But right now are the best days of my life. Why? Because I'm happily married to a woman that I never thought I would, you know, have in my life when I was, you know, 18 years old. I'm happily married. I'm healthy. I'm running, you know, marathons. I'm doing stuff now that I wasn't able to do when I was in high school, when I was in college.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna cut you off there because I actually have some follow up questions that I want to ask you, but we're getting ready to go to break. The music's coming in, so when we come back from break, I do want to ask you a couple of questions. I want to ask you some questions. You said you had a wife. I didn't ask those questions in the beginning, but I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I want to ask you some questions about your mother, and because we never talked about her, and then we're gonna get into the things that you teach and the things that you coach. Like, I know you have several seminars. Like, you have a seminar on health, wealth, and knowledge of yourself. Forever in the fourth quarter. Cool and cute won't cut it. Breaking the chains of dysfunction and calling all colleges. You got some really good programs out there that I want to get into and talk a little bit about what you're talking about. So, if you don't mind staying with us, we'll be right back.
No problem.
All right, cool. So, this is AM 1620, Eagle Radio Network. Global Executive Media is our sponsor. Check them out at www.globalexecutivemedia.com. And we'll be right back after these brief messages. Welcome back to Launchpad Radio. I'm your host, Kobe Dumas, and joined with my co-host, Isaac DeSoto, and guest co-host, Bobby Sanchez.
Amen.
So welcome. Alan, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, so before we went on break, Alan, we were talking a little bit about, I wanted to go back and talk about your mom. You mentioned your dad earlier, but I didn't hear you mention a lot about your mother.
Okay, cool. We can talk about that.
I'm just curious.
I have two mothers. My parents got divorced when I was 12.
Okay.
So I have what's called my mother and I have what's called my mama.
I got two mamas too, so I relate to you 100%.
Yeah, and I love them both dearly. My mother currently resides on the West Coast. She lives in Vegas. Right outside of Vegas, and she was the one that taught me a lot about. And this is a great thing I love to talk about. My mother taught me about the importance of education. She taught me how to speak. She taught me how to dress. She taught me how to interact professionally. She taught me the importance of being. She taught me the importance of having a good first impression. She gave me a really expanded view of the world in terms of professionalism and training and just carrying yourself like a young man and just having pride in your appearance. I got all of those things from my mother. And when my parents got divorced, my dad remarried to my mama. Now, my mama was the heart and soul of my childhood. She was the woman who brought, you know, the Bible with her and told her, look, we going to church and we going to learn about God and we going to learn how to pray. And she was one of those down home mothers that would cook the big meals. And, you know, she was just a strong support system for me. She came to all of my football games. So I love her to this day. And that's my mama. So, and there's no hierarchy between the two. You know, I just call one my mother and I call the other one my mama. And my mama is currently here in the Chicago area, a wonderful woman, married my dad, loved my dad till the day he died. And she was the one who really held me together while I was in college, helped me together while I was in high school. You know, a lot of my success is based on the prayers and things that she did for me. And I love my mother just as much because the lessons that I learned from my mother were very invaluable, and they helped me when I got to college. So I got the best of both worlds. I got the mother who would teach you how to dress, and then I had the mother who would teach you how to pray. I had the mother who would teach you how to conduct yourself in an interview, and then I had the mother that would teach you what it's like to go to a soup kitchen and feed the homeless. So I had the best of both worlds, man. So, I mean, I am really blessed to have both mothers. So Mother's Day is really great for me, and I don't have any ill will towards none of my parents. You know,
that's why I wanted to go back, man, because mothers are important, you know, and it is Mother's Day week. You know, happy Mother's Day to my mother and my mom. At the same time, man, that's a big part, at least of my journey, and a lot of people that I know, their mother or some mother figure was a huge part of their journey. And you seem like you have a lot of those traits. That's why I was asking.
Yeah. My dad was the rock of my childhood, though. My dad was, my dad was my rock, you know. I gained so much from him in terms of just how to be a man, you know. And there were certain things that my dad couldn't teach me in reference to the professional realm, because my dad was a steel worker, you know, hard hat and boots kind of guy. So all he would tell me is that you go into college. He didn't know how we were going to pay for it. He didn't know what I was going to major in, but he constantly told me, you're going to college. Every time he would introduce us to his friends and stuff, he would say, this one right here is going to college. And I'm like, why do you keep saying that? What if I don't want to go to college? But
that was me all day. I wasn't really a school guy, man. I drug myself through school. You know, girls was one of the things that kept me in school as well. But you know, I really went, you know, my whole thing with school, man, once I was able, you know, I worked since I was younger than 15. I always was trying to make money to bring stuff in the household because my mom told me, if you want those shoes, if you want those pants, you're going to have to buy it on your own because I'm buying you this. And I'm like, I'm not wearing no tough skins to school, mom. They're going to talk about me.
What? Right? No, what are the tough skins, Cody?
See, look. See, they don't even know.
Are those like Crocs?
Yeah, look.
I don't even know what tough skins are.
Okay, so look. Here's a job for the millennials, because I know you know what tough skins are, Bryson, right?
Tough skins were the brand of jeans that they
wear. Yeah. Okay, just stop right there. Just stop right there. I want y'all homework tonight is to Google YouTube tough skins commercial.
So they like Wranglers, basically.
Man.
Like Wranglers all good until somebody spot that they're Wranglers.
Nah, man. Yeah.
Like you can get any shirts you want, any shirts, any shoes.
Yeah, no, you can spot some tough skins from you can spot tough skins across a 100 yards of football field. But anyway, you know, that was I was
some
working at a
chaps.
Yeah, I was working at a young age, so, you know, so school for me, college for me, it was a different route for me, although, like you said, I put importance on education. I just learned a lot differently than other people. You know,
right.
I needed some strategic and specific classes. I didn't want to go and get everything that I thought that I already knew. I just wanted to go and say, okay, this is going to serve me. I need what's going to serve me so that I can move forward. And that's kind of how I did my education. But I get it, man. A lot of people get into those situations. But speaking of, you have some amazing workshops.
Oh, thank you.
How often do you do your workshops?
There's a season of ebbs and flows. I have a slow season and it picks up and then it slows down. Summertime is kind of slow, but in the fall it picks up, and then towards graduation time it picks up, slows down somewhat in the spring. Black History Month is always a big time, but I do workshops, you know, for different universities, schools, programs, things like that, and I do professional workshops for staff members. I have a workshop called Winning in the Workplace, where it talks about a lot of different ways to interact with coworkers in reference to having a team as opposed to a group, you know. And so many times in our, you know, in our workplaces, we have groups but not teams. We have coworkers but not teaming.
And so you know what? I'm gonna let the cat out the bag a little bit. I'm writing a book on culture involving around that specific subject because I think that society has lost the culture. And you know, I was talking about this with my mentor, and one of the things that we identify, he actually identified it and always knew that that's what it was. But it was a paradigm shift for me. This happened just about a month ago. It was a paradigm shift for me because he was saying, you know, one of the things that he can't get in his business that he has right now and he tries to instill in people is that that culture is important. What people are getting paid, how you treat them, how you treat each other at work, the environment, all of that stuff is important. And if you find a business or a company that has that's doing really bad and that's not winning and they should be winning, I guarantee you the culprit is probably culture.
It is, yeah. And if you look at some of the other countries in terms of how they treat their employees and how many days per week they work and
huge.
The quality of life, you'd be surprised.
Yeah. Huge.
But I do look up for all of those different things.
Yeah, huge. My wife's a foreigner, so I get to see it firsthand, and even in her culture. Now, there's pros and cons to it because, you know, like their culture, they take care of themselves and their people. But at the same time, it's like hard to get time off from the company. The company is all and everything in that environment. So, you know, but at the same time, their culture is very different. It's very caring. It's very loving. And they take care of their people.
Right. But the work stops, they vary. And I have a latest one that's going over really well. I've done it all over the country. Not all over the country, but at different universities around the country. It's called Development for Your Destiny. And it basically talks about ways to improve your life and get to your destiny. And those are some things that we really need to start to focus on and have some connections with, because people are so busy chasing money and chasing relationships and chasing prestige and chasing attention that they really don't stop to say, what is the purpose of my life? Why was I born? What is the purpose of my life? What is the assignment on my life? So that's what this workshop talks about. What is the assignment on your life? And I've mentioned that before, but it's something that I have to keep pushing, because people really need to understand that there's an assignment on your life.
Right.
And when you find out what that assignment is, there is nothing you won't do, there's nowhere you won't go, and you operate differently. When you know your why, when you know your purpose, you operate differently. People look at you differently. People, you know, you speak differently. You carry yourself differently.
So how do you go about, and you know what? We don't have a short answer, but how do you go about helping somebody understand that that's valuable and then point them in the right direction to start discovering that? Because you can't discover it for them. They have to find it. How do you point them in the right direction?
They have to find it on their own. But the thing is that, one, you have to detoxify. You have to cleanse yourself of all of the distractions. And so many times that people are so consumed by distractions that they don't see their purpose and they don't see their destiny. And when you are someone that's seeking to find out what your assignment is and what your purpose is, you have to put blinders on. You know, you got to cut the social media addiction, because social media will have you thinking either two things: either my life is the greatest life in the world, or my life sucks below comprehension. And it's from the constant comparison to people who are maybe lying or living the life that they want. You know what I mean? So you've got to clear your mind, you got to clear your spirit, you got to clear your conscience, and really have conversations with yourself. If you're a person of faith, have conversations with God, or it just gets you a group of people that have like-minded ideologies, and then talk about what do we do to get to where we need to be. Also, reading helps. I mean, I read a lot of different authors that kind of talk about purpose and destiny, and those things kind of, you know, they give me insight and they give me inspiration. They give me different ways to look at how I have been operating in my life. And I tell in my workshops, I talk about certain things, three things, if I can share with you guys: seek, speak, sanitize.
Wow, love it.
Seek, speak, sanitize. Seek. Number one, you got to seek what it is that you want. So if you want something in life, you got to surround yourself with people. You got to surround yourself with people who can help you get there. You got to find and read materials that will get you to where you need to be. You need to see people who are where you are and talk to them. Don't talk about them, talk to them.
Well, you know what? Let me stop you right there. We're going to continue with this when we come back from break. We stopped on speak. So give us a second. We got to take a break real quick. This is our last break. Okay. When we come back, we're going to finish with this. And then we're also going to talk about some golden nuggets. Again, this is AM 1620 Eagle Radio Network. You're listening to Launchpad Radio, sponsored by www.globalexecutivemedia. Your place to tell your story for books, branding, marketing, and design. Check us out. We'll be right back after these brief messages. Welcome back to Launchpad Radio. Joined with Isaac DeSoto, Bobby Sanchez, and myself, Kobe Dumas. Just gathering my thoughts here. We're on with Alan Bryson. And before we went to break, Alan, are you still with us?
Yes.
All right. So before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about your journey. And we were talking about the stuff that you provide, your courses. I want to get into where people can find you. You were speaking about the three things. I think you said.
Speak, seek, and sanitize.
Yeah, speak, seek, and sanitize. And you stopped on speak, and I wanted to go back to seek and sanitize once you finished with speak.
Okay. Before I go any further, I just wanted to, first of all, thank you guys so much for having me, man. I wanted to just say I've had an enjoyable time talking with you all. And I feel like we haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg. So I hope that I can come back and we can have some further discussions. But thank you guys so much for having me. And also thank you to my publisher, Cheryl Catherine Wash, who facilitated this connection with you guys. So I'm really grateful for that. But the seek part, that's the first S. The second S is speak. You have to speak what you want. So many times we live in a society where people want the best of life, but they always speak the worst. I'm a firm believer, and like I said in the clip that you all played, once the spirit's wrapping sound, and you release a word out of your mouth, you release a spirit that's going to have an outcome on your life. So you can't
that's
say
true.
You want, I tell women all the time, you can't say you want a loving relationship, but you're constantly getting on social media talking about, oh, girl, ain't no good men out here. I tell young men all the time, you can't say, well, I want to be rich. I want to be rich. And you constantly talk about, man, I'm so broke, I can't pay attention. You have to make sure that you speak to things that you want in life. You know, I'm a firm believer that God does not move on what you see. God moves on what you say. And when you say something, that's when God puts it into fruition with you. Because what happens is we see all of this negativity and we will start to consume what we see. And we need to change what we see by changing what we say. You got to say what you want. You got to say what you think. You got to say what you believe to change the paradigm in people's lives. So that's one of the biggest parts of my platform is basically positive speaking, because when you speak to a child and you tell that child you are beautiful, you're bold, you are an individual, you're going to be great, you're going to do some amazing things, those are seeds that are planted in that child based on what is spoken. But when you tell a child, you know, you won't do it like me, or you're going to be just like your no good dad, or, you know, nobody from our family has ever accomplished that, you're planting negative seeds. You know, so what I'm saying is that the second S is speak. You got to speak what you want in your life. Everything from, you know, where you want to go professionally, to the type of relationships you want to have, to the types of friends you want to have, to even the weather. You walk outside and they say, man, this is going to be a storm. And then he's like, ah, I think it's going to clear up. You know, you got to upset, you know, you got to be willing to upset people. You got to be willing to make people think you crazy. When I go to work, I upset people at my job every day because they come with me and they say, did you hear about the girl that got shot at 17? I say, no, but I heard about the girl who graduated at 16 from Spelman College. That's what I heard. So every time I'm walking up and down the hall, they're like, here come old Les Brown. I'm like, you're right. That's right. Call me baby Les Brown.
Uh-huh. Yeah, see? Now I'm starting to hear it. Yeah, now I'm starting to hear it.
I'm
because
sure
that's what.
Too.
Yeah, that's what you get when you're an aggravational speaker. When you're a motivator in a different kind of way, because you tell people what they should hear, not what they want to hear.
And that's the thing. You know, you got to be willing to upset some folks. You got to be willing to have people think that you're crazy. people talk when I do my speeches in front of kids all the time, and they're like, man, how do you have that energy? Or how do you go up in front of those kids and not be scared? I say, man, I'm just crazy. I got to be crazy enough to believe you do.
That's
and
right.
Young audiences are the absolute hardest group to speak with. It is so hard to speak in front of young people because if you don't grab them by the ear within the first six words that you say, you lost them.
Yeah, I was going to say 3 seconds, but you said six words. That's about equivalent.
And Alan, I have a question to go along with that. You've been an educator. You've been a motivator. People look up to you, especially the youth, from what I can see in your videos. If there was like one person, specifically youth, we'll say, but one person that inspired you, from you inspiring them, what did they say to you? I don't necessarily need to hear who it was, but you know, what did they say to you and when? Like, how did that move you?
I think it was my parents. All three of them told me different things. My mom told me that your mouth is going to take you to great places, so make sure you say the right thing. You have a voice, you use it often, you talk a lot, which means you have to be careful of what you say, and you got to say the right things around the right people at the right time. Then my dad would always teach me that part of being a man is never staying on the ground. You're going to fall, you're going to get back up, you're going to fall, you're going to get up, you're going to get knocked down, you're going to get up. You have to keep fighting. Right. Part of being a man and a part of a man is like dating. One of the reasons that, you know, men, part of a man's DNA is rejection. As a man in relationships and dating, rejection is part of our DNA. Hey, young lady, how you doing? No. Hey, sweetheart, I can't. Boy, bye. Hey,
man, sometimes
I might write a book on that.
Sometimes you don't even get to get one word out.
I might write one
you
on
just
that.
Get the, they just ignore you, just, you, they walk away.
Yeah, or you just get what my mama do all the time, the Alan, look.
Alan, one more thing. I wanted to ask you, do you have a pupil under your tutelage that inspired you is what I mean. I probably should have been clear.
Not one in particular, but just all of my students that I work with. All of my students that I work with, they come back with all of these amazing stories. I had one student that was in my program, and she said, I used to hate to speak in front of people. I used to be so nervous, and I used to hate to speak in front of people. But ever since I've been hanging out and been around you, I have become crazy enough to start to think that what I have to say matters and the people need to hear it. And I was like, wow. And then one of my students told me, he said, you know what I see about you? I said, what? He said, you don't look at what people look at when they see you. All you care about is giving them the medicine. I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, Mr. Bryson, they call me Uncle Allen. So some of my students called me Uncle Allen. They said, I'm going to tell you this right now. This is how I see you. You are like a surgeon with scrubs on. I was like, what does that mean? He said, look at the outfit that surgeons wear. It is one of the most ridiculous looking outfits that you can wear at work. The scrubs, the hat, the shoes, everything that surgeons wear looks absolutely ridiculous. But the surgeons don't care about how they look. All they care about is completing a successful surgery. That's how you are. You don't care if kids look at you like you're crazy. You don't care if people tell you to calm down. You don't care how people take what you say. You do care, but you are more focused on completing a successful surgery than what you think people are going to think when you get off stage. And I was like, wow. And he said, that's what helped me to overcome my stage fright. I see my audience as a occupation of sick people, and I see myself as somebody who has some medicine and some procedures that can help save their lives. So when they look at me sideways, I'm like, I don't care what you think of how I look or what I'm doing or what I sound like, but get the message. And he said, when I get that from you, that's what makes me want to become a better speaker. And this is a student telling me this. And I'm
Yeah, no,
that's powerful. That's powerful.
Super powerful.
Inspiring.
Well, I want to take this time to say a couple of things. First, you know, we always have amazing guests here. So, you know, I don't want to say I always ask our great guests to come back, because I ask them all to come back, because our publisher, producer, Cheryl and Isaac, they do a great job on getting the right people for the stuff that we like to talk about. And man, you're right. We only hit the tip of the iceberg. A lot of people get scared of the 2 hours when they come onto the show. They don't. They're like, man, 2 hours. What I'm going to talk about? They don't understand that time flies and we run out. So I want to say thank you. I do want to have you back. Now that we know your story, the next time you come back, we may just focus a little bit more on some of the teachings like this motivational stuff that you're talking about right now and getting some conversation and getting people, you know, out of the negative mindset that they have. And we can do this, man. So I want to say thank you for taking the time and coming out and coming on the show. And, you know,
thank you all for having me. Man. I really appreciate this. And I look forward to our next conversations. I really do. I look forward to that. Because you're right. 2 hours went by. I'm like, I'm looking at my clock and I'm like, 12:45. We haven't even touched the book yet. We haven't even touched it. So we have to come back because there's so much more we need to discuss. And then so much, and I really enjoyed my time with you guys. You guys, it's like sitting in a living room with coffee on the table and with the TV on ESPN on mute.
And that's exactly the experience that we want to create. We want to create that kind of an experience because we want to help people change, but people got to come to the conversation. If they think the conversation is a certain way, that's like everybody else's or that they're not going to get the good information, they won't sit down and listen with us and talk with us and interact with us.
So if there's anything that you gentlemen want me to touch on or anything you want to specifically discuss, let me know in advance and I'll be prepared to talk about that. But yeah, I look forward to coming back and thank you guys again so much for having me. I had a wonderful time.
We had a great time.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, we love having you.
All right, please do come back.
You can check my YouTube channel. Just plug in Alan Bryson. And YouTube and all, a lot of my speeches come up. Also, my website, alanjbryson.com. And you can also reach me at Instagram, on Instagram, at Bryson Motivate. All one word, BRYSON Motivate. At Bryson Motivate on Instagram.
There it is there. So thank you for coming on to the show. That's our time. We really appreciate you. And we'll
thank
talk
you,
to you
gentlemen.
Soon.
Thank you so much.
So
yes,
those
have a great day.
Thank you. You as well. So those of you that's listening, this is Launchpad Radio. Again, we just wrapped up with Alan J. Bryson, and we are off to the next show. You guys ready for the week?
Yes, I am. Oh, yeah. I'm always looking forward for the week.
Yeah. So next week, we'll have another great guest, I'm sure. Check us out, yourpersonalgps.com/Launchpad Radio. Make sure you check out our sponsors at www.globalexecutivemedia.com and come join us back next week every Thursday 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. See you next week.
This show is sponsored by Global Executive Media. globalexecutivemedia.com.
What I like you to do right
what
now,
I like you
I
to do
you
right
to think
now,
about your dreams.
Welcome to the home of Launchpad Radio.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
It's Launchpad Radio.
With your host,
I'm Kobe Dumas, your personal GPS.
And I'm Isaac DeSola.
This is Launchpad Radio.
This is your radio.